Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we go on this Tuesday evening edition of The Horn. I'm Bob. Let's see. You know, this is one of those evenings when I just sort of grit my teeth, cross my fingers, throw the horseshoe over whichever shoulder it is and the salt over the other one and hope for the best. Because I've experienced repeated connectivity outages in the last couple of hours. And of all the nights, you know, because we got big doings afoot tonight. We have the incredibly intelligent and stunningly inspiring Elizabeth Kucinich on the program this evening, and for good reason. I can't imagine this conversation being more apropos. In light of the absolutely miserable comments of Flush Flemball in the last 7 to 10 days, you remember the dumpster diving comments? Yes, of course you do. Well, the Child Nutrition Act reauthorization will be there will be hearings about it in committee in the House beginning this coming Thursday. The Healthy Schools Meal Act. No, Healthy School Meals Act. Come on, Bob. Get it together. The Healthy School Meals Act is part and parcel of this. And it is Mrs. Kucinich is working hard to see that some of that is included in the upcoming reauthorization bill. Elizabeth Kucinich will be joining us right around the bottom of this hour, right about 6:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. So I hope you'll stick around for that. It should be an excellent conversation. You know, when you think about something as odious, and by something I do mean Flush Flemball, because considering him in the ranks of the human is one of those Herculean tasks for which I am not at all well suited. But when you think about odious comments like his, telling children that they need to learn to go and dumpster dive during the long, hot months of summer when many children don't have parents at home, nor any nanny to fix them meals, and given the unemployment numbers in this country, and given the financial crisis that still stalks this nation, suggesting that children are hungry simply because they're too damned lazy to go and get off, go and open a cabinet and open a can of pork and beans, it really does show the disconnect that Flemball has with this country. He might as well be broadcasting to this country from Mars. Fortunately for us, Elizabeth Kucinich is not from Mars. And she does understand and comprehend the challenges that face both parents and children in this country. It is nothing of which anyone should be making light. And I'm looking forward to what I hope will be a wide-ranging and interesting conversation with Mrs. Kucinich starting in about 25 minutes. Now, program notes and reminders. I'm going to say this every evening so that nobody will say, well, damn, where'd Bob go when we're doing all the live broadcasting next week? What's all this history talk going on? Listen, for virtually every day beginning Tuesday, the 6th of July, through the following Wednesday, we will be broadcasting, and I'm taking Horn intern junior grade Ferg with me to help. We will be broadcasting live from the campus of Concord University in Athens, West Virginia, as our good friend Dr. Bill O'Brien and former host on this network, and hopefully someday future host on this network, because until you've had a chance to listen to Dr. Bill patiently and gently explain where the right is going wrong via the realities of American history, you really haven't had a good Achilles-esque dipping by the heel in the river of history itself. You just haven't. To experience Dr. Bill is to really, really come to terms with what it means to be a student of history. And so beginning on Tuesday, July the 6th, and going all the way through to the week following Wednesday, what you're going to hear on the Horn is day by day about 12 hours of rock-solid historical fact. Now, I'm not talking about the kind of the bogus hootenanny history Glenn Beck, like, for instance, today where he said that Obama is going to de-develop America and cut average income to $14,000 a year. Really? $14,000? We're all going to get $14,000? Shoot, that'll be an improvement for a bunch of us. But no, not that kind. This is the real stuff with real scholars and a panel of scholars. And it will be practically 12 hours a day for a solid week. Let's see. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Yeah, that's 8 days. Sorry, I had to get out the extra fingers. But I don't want anybody to be confused and not understanding what's going on. So, as the automated voice used to say when you would get a number that had been changed, please make a note of it. Okay. So that's what's coming up. You know, we got past Moran Monday yesterday, and obviously we didn't get all the work done. But God Almighty, how are you supposed to? It's like, I don't know, it's like you got a little storefront. And you're sitting there minding the store with your fruits and vegetables. And you're minding your own business, and all of a sudden somebody comes through and puts a brick through your window. Well, that's a traumatic experience. But still, you call the glazier and you put the window back in. 2 days later, another brick. You do it again. 3 days later, another brick. And then the next, and then it's two bricks a day, and then it's four bricks a day, and then it's a brick every hour, and then it's a brick every half hour. Well, that's what it is with the lunacy of the right wing in this country. The bricks are coming so fast and so furious that it becomes almost more than any human being could do to keep up with it. But God knows we try. We do try. And I hope you'll forgive me if I'm a little bit, well, I was stunned. I was doing my research all day long. And then toward the end of my show prep, I get hit right between the eyes with something that's utterly stunning. And yes, it comes from Michelle Bachmann. And yes, she is, she's so far past Moran, the light from Moran won't reach her for a million years. She's just goddamn dumb, Okay? She just is. And we're all used to that. And there's nothing new in it, and there's no news in it, and there's not much to comment on. But this latest thing, you know, I heard it, and it just, you know, the marbles rattled inside my weird little skull. And I thought, wait a minute, what am I hearing here? I'm hearing something here that runs past the ordinary run-of-the-mill Moran commentary. Now, Michelle Bachmann, R, batshit crazy, gave a radio interview to this right-wing loon. Oh, he's a loony. I mean, this is stunning stuff. I was reading it, and I listened to it to make sure that somebody hadn't blown the transcription. And they hadn't. And I thought back to a dear friend of mine, long gone now. She was from Cambridge, and I mean the one in England. And though she had been over here for nigh 50 years, she never lost the accent. And she'd get frustrated with someone and look at him and say, "I don't be so gormless." Now, naturally, me being the curious young man I was, the hell is gormless? Well, I found out. It is literally to be without gorm, I suppose. It is to be stupid. It is to be idiotic. It is to be imbecilic. And when I read that, that was the first word that came to mind. My dear friend, now gone, sitting there with a full-strength Winston clutched between her fingers. Don't be so gormless. And what this is wingnut radio interview time regarding Barack Obama's visit to the G20. Now, I got my own issues with all these G this and G that's and 8s and 20s and hut, hut, hut. But that's not the point here. And it's not, the point here isn't even necessarily about defending President Obama. But Lord God, if you listen to this and you don't come away thinking about that quote from Dean Swift, that you shall know a great man by these presents, that wherever he go, he shall be surrounded by a confederacy of dunces. If that doesn't come to mind when you listen to this gormless fool, well, the quote hath no meaning. I give you now world policy analysis on the part of Michelle Bachmann, our batshit crazy of Minnesota.
What did you make of the G20 summit this weekend in Toronto, in which President Obama says he's going to call your bluff, Congresswoman Bachmann, about all this talk of deficits, because he's going to actually cut the deficit in 2013. This after sending a letter in advance saying, "Whoa, be careful now," and all this talk of reducing the deficit because we can't stop the spending too quick, or we'll be in trouble there. What did you make of that?
Well, I think what really concerned me was Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner said that we don't want to see one country's economy doing better than another. What? This is the U.S. Treasury Secretary? We don't want to see Zimbabwe's economy do better than the United States? Aren't we supposed to be about the United States and making sure that our economy can be the greatest in the world?
Well, you'll pardon me if I interject for a moment, that there's not a Republican policy out there that would contribute to the United States being the greatest economy in the world. We've seen, in fact, that after 8 miserable, tortured years of the George W. Bush administration, that is how we began going swirly down the drain. And you watch the little tornado develop there over the little holes in the bathtub drain. Swirly, 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 swirly. And that's us. And that's Bush's doing. And frankly, all this business about we're gonna cut the deficit in 2013, on who, frankly, you know, if I had the opportunity, I'd ask Barack Obama, on whose ass? Whose ox is gonna get gored, Mr. President? You know that ox goring business, they talk about it all the time in law school. It's all well and good as long as it's somebody else's ox getting gored. Well, my ox is getting awfully damn close to the horns, and so are the oxen of several million Americans who are without gainful employment, and another several millions of Americans who are without adequate pay, and several millions of Americans who are without. So there is that. But Yeah, because Michelle Bachmann's going to make the United States economy the greatest in the world. I want to see that rabbit come out of that hat. I really do.
If you look at the G20, what they're trying to do is bind together the world's economies. Look how that played out in the European Union when they bound all of those nations.
What's our fascination with bondage? Oh, let's look at you, Michelle. Oh, you've been a naughty girl, you have. You need a spanking. Naughty zoot! Naughty zoot! You left the grail-shaped beacon shining, didn't you? Yes, you did. But, no, okay, stop it, Bob. This is serious radio.
Economy.
No, it's not. I'm not anywhere near a satellite.
Together, and one of the smallest economies, Greece, when they got into trouble, that one little nation is bringing down the entire EU. Well, President Obama is trying to bind the United States into a global economy where all of our nations come together in a global economy. I don't want the United States to be in a global economy where our economic future is bound to that of Zimbabwe. We can't necessarily trust the decisions that are being made financially in other countries.
See, that's the problem, though. Did you catch that? In the space of just a hundred or so words, two references to Zimbabwe. Who anywhere said anything about binding our nation to that of Zimbabwe? Anybody? Show of hands. Did you do it? I didn't do it. No, you didn't do it either? Okay. President Barack Obama? No. Tim Geithner? No. Zimbabwe? Really? Zimbabwe? Where did she get Zimbabwe? I mean, what about the real problem we have in regards to a bound economy? Because, you see, our economy is hopelessly bound to that of, come on, fill in the blank test, China. And it makes me increasingly uncomfortable because all those jobs we'd like to have, they're in China. All that manufacturing capacity we'd like to have, it's in China, too. Our pensions, China. Our health care, China, Afghanistan, Iraq. And so I can't help asking the question, why Zimbabwe? Why Zimbabwe? If you're going to pick out some random country that isn't China for our for this hypothetical bit of the insane snake handling, rolling on the floor, speaking in tongues, babbling. Why Zimbabwe? I think I have an answer. I think I have an answer. And it has nothing to do with Michelle Bachmann. Oh, dear God, he's playing Beautiful Mind again. Because you have to go back to the Elena Kagan confirmation hearings, where on the very first day, Elena Kagan was attacked for what? Well, I offer you a quote from Arizona Senator John Kyle. Who said, again, this is a quote, "Thurgood Marshall's judicial philosophy is not what I would consider to be mainstream." Why did they say that? Why did he say that? He said that because Elena Kagan had expressed admiration, not slavish sycophancy, simple admiration. And my God, look at the man, look at the life that was Thurgood Marshall. How do you not admire that? Even if you're Jefferson Beauregard Sessions of Hood, how do you not admire that? But Elena Kagan was attacked for simply saying that she admired Thurgood Marshall, who served ably and nobly, both in trial practice and on the court of the Supreme Court of the United States, on the bench. The Republicans went so far as to actually distribute distribute opposition research to reporters covering the confirmation about cases not that Elena Kagan decided because she's never been a judge, but rather cases that Thurgood Marshall decided as if she were the one who did it and not Thurgood Marshall. Do you see where this beautiful mind business is taking me? Because it's awfully damned hard to miss in my book. Consider Jefferson Beauregard Sessions the Fourth. Now, where is Jefferson Beauregard Sessions the Fourth from? Well, this is a guy, remember, who called other lawyers who worked with him, who happened to be of darker skin complexion than he, boy. Boy, better be careful how you talk to the white women's around here. He said it. I'm not making it up. This is the same guy who said, well, you know, I always thought the Ku Klux Klan was pretty cool till I found out they smoked the marijuana. Really? I wish I was making it up. Because knowing that those are facts and that they are facts about a sitting U.S. senator just makes me want to huddle up in a corner, roll up into a fetal ball, and suck my thumbs. This is America in 2010? But you see, do you not? Do you not see? Where Michelle Bachmann got Zimbabwe? Because there's lots of other countries out there. If you want to talk about a country that you don't want to bind your economy to, she's already mentioned Greece. That might not be a good idea. How would we feel about tying our economy to Turkmenistan? Or Uzbekistan? Or Myanmar? But no. No. Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe, formerly known as Rhodesia, named after, I believe, Cecil Rhodes, a country that had to take back its own land from its white overlords. You understand now, don't you? Jesus, that sounded almost Glenn Becky. Somebody get me a drink. But really, you understand, she said Zimbabwe because what she was implying, remember, she's talking about President Obama, and she couldn't say Kenya. That would have been too obvious. So you have to send out a little code to that weird 24% of America who pretty sure that one was born outside Merca. Remember, we went over the poll data last night? We don't want to let that dark-skinned man bind our economies up to the well-being of other dark-skinned people. Because, by God, we're white, lily white, and we're better than that.
President Obama is trying to bind the United States into a global economy where all of our nations come together in a global economy. I don't want the United States to be in a global economy where our economic future is bound to that of Zimbabwe. Negroes. We can't necessarily trust the decisions that are being made financially in other countries where there are Negroes.
Did I mention that Thurgood Marshall was black? The first African-American justice of the Supreme Court. And so this is the babble that's coming out of the right wing in the House of Representatives, while in the august body of the United States Senate, with Robert C. Byrd, the sage of the Senate, the soul of the Senate, not even completely chilled yet. The old race baiters come scuffling out from under the baseboards, from behind the baseboards. And there they are with the lights on them. It even goes so far, and this is quite stunning. David in Tennessee put me onto this. I had to go check it out, and yes, it was true. Fox News cut away from questions by Democratic senators of Elena Kagan and filled until the Repiglicans' time before the camera came on. We're waiting for Hatch, said Fox. We're waiting for Hatch. Given the Repiglicans' tone, even Tweety Matthews referred to the Repiglicans as the Confederacy. This is all so obvious and so sickening and so disgusting and so utterly bass-ackwards from anything that any of us ever imagined wanting the United States to be. And it's going on right before our very eyes. And it just leaped off the pages at me this afternoon, even after I'd done a whole bunch of other prep. Breaking news. Guess what? In the Senate, the Repiglicans have blocked a measure sponsored by Senator Patty Murray of Washington that would provide additional benefits to homeless veterans. Homeless female veterans. Homeless female veterans and their homeless children. And they blocked it. We got to stop this, y'all spending. Especially spending that ain't being spending on good, upstanding, white Christian people. Hallelujah, praise Jesus, amen. And so all of this is sort of a backdrop as we prepare to talk with Elizabeth Kucinich about the process of reauthorizing school meal programs and what it means to have a school meal program and what the purpose and frankly thrust of a school meal program should be. And I submit to you that this is going to be an uphill climb if you haven't noticed. Because we're talking about feeding poor children. And the Repiglican Party would just as soon that they go die. We're talking about feeding children whose only meals that day may come at school, and for whom summer is a season of rumbling bellies and dry throats. So I am truly looking forward to our conversation with Mrs. Kucinich. And what we're going to do, we'll take a break right now while we await her phone call. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You are listening to The Horn. Thank you.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
I've seen the bright lights on
you just heard is called Killing Time. And if you're going to kill time, whom better than the immortal Little Feet and the late, great Little George. I'm Bob. This is The Horn. And we were waiting for a 6:30 call from Elizabeth Kucinich that apparently is not going to happen for reasons entirely unknown to me. But no worries. You know, that's I once knew a juggler. And he said, son, because I was young then, son, the trick to juggling is if you drop something, make it look like part of the act. Well, I'm not very good at that right now because I'd sort of, well, you know, you plan on things and you expect things to be what they are and then they're not and then, well, damn. But at any rate, there's a solid, listen, I could fill a Bobster the rest of the night away. I honest to God could. What I mentioned a few minutes ago is true. This, you know, there's if we talk about the hunger, the hunger of school children, well, some of those school children are the children of veterans of the Iraq and Afghanistan debacles. And today, it is a fact that Senator Patty Murray, a Democrat from Washington, that is upstanding, right respectable, introduced something called the Homeless Women Veterans and Homeless Veterans with Children Act. And she asked for unanimous consent for it. Because really, tell me, in the title of that, tell me what is objectionable about the Homeless Veterans with Children Act. It expands assistance for homeless women veterans and homeless veterans with children, increases funding and extended federal grant programs to address the language of the bill says the unique challenges faced by these veterans. Shall we replace that with a little bit of honest, straightforward English? It addresses the hell on earth that homeless veterans and their children deal with on a minute-by-minute, hour-by-hour, day-by-day basis. With Senator Murray's unanimous consent request, however, came word from Senate Minority Leader Chinless Mitch McConnell. Addison McConnell.
I came to the floor last week and spoke about S-1237, which is the Homeless Veterans and Other Veterans Health Care Authorities Act of 2010, an extremely important and timely bill that will help many women, women with children and men with children today who served our country come home and do not have the support and services they need and end up homeless on our streets. So I come to the Senate floor today to urge our colleagues to pass this bill quickly, and I ask unanimous consent the Senate proceed to the immediate consideration of calendar number 360 S-1237. The Homeless Veterans and Other Veterans Health Care Authorities Act.
Is there objection?
Madam President, reserving the right to object, and I will have to object on behalf of my colleague, Senator Coburn from Oklahoma. He has concerns about this legislation, particularly as he indicates in a letter that I'll ask consent of.
What? Tom Coburn of Oklahoma? Listen. If Texas secedes, can Oklahoma please go with them? Really? Tom Coburn objects to helping homeless veterans? I realize. In the grand scheme of Republican priorities, it is necessary to screw today's veterans' children, so that Repiglick and grandchildren and trust fund babies won't have to deal with the debt, after all. It's about the debt, you understand. We can't run deficits now that there's no longer a Republican in the White House, you understand. Really? We're gonna austeritize on the backs of homeless veterans' children? Jesus Christ. I don't ever want to hear one of these rat bastards talk about how they love Jeebus no more. Mm-mm, not ever again. Slap! But let us hear the particular concerns as brought forth by Senator Chinless Mitch Addison McConnell as to just what the problem was.
Here in the record, that it be paid for up front so the promises it makes to veterans are in fact kept. So, Madam President, I object.
Huh? He's objecting because it's not being paid for up front? Little memo to Tom Coburn. When those veterans who are homeless and whose children are on the street and hungry, when their mommies and daddies marched off to the war that you slimy, scummy sons of bitch and bastards started, and they shed their blood, and they wrecked their bodies, and they shattered their minds, I guess they should have gotten the money from you, Tom Coburn, and Mitch McConnell, and you miserable, worthless, godforsaken fiends. They should have gotten the money from you up front, shouldn't they? But they didn't. They laid down their lives and their bodies, their fortunes and their sacred honor. They laid that down before you, you goddamn devils, on the installment plan. And you miserable debt welchers, you bailed on them. Jesus, I hate them. And I don't like using that word. But God help me, I do. I despise a right-winger. I despise a conservative, family values Republican with every iota, with every cell, with every molecule, and every last bit of my being. I despise them. I'd spit on the ground at them, save for the fact that I've more regard for my own spit. God damn them. Hey, Satan, get them little demons jumping hard on the bellas, because we want the fires real hot when Chinless Mitch McConnell and Tom Coburn get to you. We want the spits to slide in real easy, baste them in their own juices over the hottest brimstone coals you can muster, because they've earned it. With every passing day, every passing moment, and every veteran who has honorably served this country and finds him or herself out on the street huddling with their children, scorched by the sun of summer and blistered by the icy winds of winter, all of that were down, all of those things were down payments that McConnell and Coburn and the family values repiglickens who support the troops have earned time and time over in a fashion inexpressible by common mathematics. Support the troops. Ron and Raleigh writing in and noting, hey, Bob, remember this is the same party that had 30 votes against the Franken bill. to remove rape from the purview of binding arbitration. These bastards have no shame, nor do their swinish constituents. And therein, Ron has flipped, what do they call it in Texas, Hold'em? He's turned that river card. And everything else has come out in the flop. Because I don't lay this entirely and exclusively at the feet of Tom Coburn. I lay it at the feet of the people who send Tom Coburn into office. Because you know, come on, it's Oklahoma. Forget it, Jake, it's Chinatown. You know what it was like in Oklahoma during the heady days of the march off to wars that we chose to wage in Afghanistan and Iraq. You know, you remember? You remember the rallies? You remember the record burnings and the disc destruction? You remember the Dixie Chicks and what were done to them? You remember as well as I do, as does Ron and Rawling. Those swinish Republican and family values constituents, they didn't walk. They ran to the polls to reelect the likes of Tom Coburn and Mitch McConnell. Because after all, Republicans support the troops. And perhaps they do, I don't know, I will not confirm it. Perhaps they do when the troops are still able to fight, but when they are no longer able so to conduct themselves, they are little more than so much waste and a drag on our society. And by God, we've got a deficit with which to concern ourselves. And we don't know that this bill is going to be paid for up front. I don't see any right-wing calls for the front end of that debt that these veterans have paid. I don't see any calls for that to be paid for up front. Where are the calls for Afghanistan and the latest round of appropriations for that to be paid for up front? Yeah, me either. Nothing but crickets. Harry Reid's spokesperson said, Republicans have their priorities backwards. According to them, it's okay to give tax breaks to CEOs who send American jobs overseas, but not to help out-of-work Americans and homeless veterans. You told him, Harry's spokesman. Meanwhile, the Coburns and the McConnells take another big old swig of that stump liquor. And that stuff makes them mean and pig-eyed, glassy-eyed, with the corneas of their eyes all gone red and shot like Rand McNally roads over a white landscape. And they think, let's find us another one to beat. Let's find us another one to stomp. You knock him down and I'll stomp him. 'Cause by God, how about that? It's what they do. But why is it that you and I are the ones talking about them the way they so richly deserve to be talked about? Where are those of ours who can stand up and say about them the truth of what they are? Where? Well, we we are few and far between. We're on some terrestrial radio stations and satellite radio, like our good friend Mike Malloy. And then there's me, out here on the little old internet, and the horn, and everything it takes to make the horn go. And we're the ones who have the nerve to stand up and say about the Repiglicans what deserves to be said. Steve Bannon over at the Washington Monthly said, this is pretty low even for Republicans. No, it's not pretty low even for Republicans. It is par for the damned course. Figure it out. Stop talking about them like this is some sort of polite dinner table conversation, because it is not, because lives hang in the balance. And the Repiglican Party, and especially those miserable bastards in the Senate, have their thumbs on the scale. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, they do. We didn't hesitate to pay up front. When Kellogg, Byrne, and Lute wanted $30 for a hamburger comprised of rotting meat that was fed to our soldiers in the field. No, we wrote the check. No, we didn't even write the check because we didn't have the damnable cash. We wrote a hot one. We whipped out the credit card and cashed it at the First National Bank of Communist China. That's what we did. And children go hungry in the night, while we pump out $400 a gallon for fuel for a Humvee in Afghanistan so they can roll around and dodge IEDs and maybe come home, and instead of dying on the mean mountain trails of Afghanistan, die in the darkened alleyways of America. They're not just evil, and evil isn't what will destroy them. It's the fact that they're so goddamned mean. We'll come back and we'll start the second hour. We've got the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen coming. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. You know the number, 877-443-2366. Light them up, 877-4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Stand not upon the order of your dialing, but dial at once.
that never died. You were waiting for me at home. Put on my jacket, I ran through the woods. I ran till I thought my chest would explode. There in a clearing, beyond the highway, in the moonlight, our wedding house shone. I rushed through the yard, I burst through the front door. My head pounding hard, up the stairs I climbed. The room was dark, our bed was empty. Then I heard
It's Tuesday, June 29, 2010.
Gulf hurricane season begins with a BP bang.
It's going to be a very negative effect on it because at some point we're going to have to break production and get those production units to a safer locale.
Saving the BP baby turtles, plus impeaching the BP judge.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
Nation, every day there's more bad news from the Gulf. It's looking less and less likely that Louisiana will be able to clean its beaches in time for their next heartbreaking disaster.
Oh, brother, this is your Green News Report. Okay, Tezzy, more than 70 days since BP's Deepwater Horizon went down in the Gulf. The oil continues to gush, and now hurricane season.
First of all, as you know, Tropical Storm Alex is passing to the south of us, going over the Yucatan Peninsula. We are watching it very, very closely for any potential impact it might have on our recovery operations at the well site.
That was Unified Incident Commander Coast Guard Admiral Thad Allen. Hurricane warnings have been issued for Texas and Mexico as soon-to-be Hurricane Alex churns across the southern Gulf of Mexico. Alex is projected to hit Mexico and will likely miss the oil spill in the Gulf, luckily. But forecasters warn high winds on the eastern edge of the storm will push oil farther into the marshes and beaches of Louisiana and Mississippi. So the oil spill response effort may dodge a bullet this time, but scientists report that ocean temperatures in the Gulf are at record highs, with the warmest temperatures ever recorded for the month of June. Now, this directly affects this year's hurricane season because the warmer the water, the more intense the storms to come.
And we're talking about hurricane or tropical storm Alex here. That's the A storm. We got the whole rest of the alphabet to go here, don't we?
And it is predicted by the hurricane prediction guys to be a very busy Atlantic hurricane season this year.
And while the hurricane is missing the rig area immediately, it's not entirely missing the area. In fact, the wave swells are coming in, and they may have to shut down production.
Yeah, here's Admiral Allen talking about what they're going to have to do, ceasing operations to evacuate.
We're
going
to have to break production and get those production units to a safer locale. Once we disconnect, whatever the flow rate that we've estimated, as you know, right now it's between 35 and 60,000 barrels a day, whatever that flow rate actually is, and we don't know that to a precise certainty, but it will be unattended.
So it's going to be left unattended. This gusher will once again be gushing free if they have to evacuate due to the storm?
Yep, basically. A new containment device is in the works to capture even more oil and allow a quicker response in case of future hurricanes, and they say that this will allow them to capture even more oil from the undersea gusher and speed up the time that it'll take to detach and reattach if they have to evacuate in case of a hurricane.
Because they may have to evacuate and then come back out time and time again this
it's
season as
very
the storms
possible.
Come in?
Oh, very possible.
Nice.
Now, BP says so far they've spent over $2.6 billion on the spill response. That's about $100 million a day.
Well, given that BP has earned, I believe, $20 billion in profit for each of the last 3 years, they're doing all right, aren't they? $2.6 billion, that's nothing.
Onshore, the oil has now landed on the beaches of Mississippi. And Mississippi Governor Haley Barbour, a Republican, who previously accused the media of overhyping the spill, has now requested more government assistance to deal with the oil coming onshore.
And has he's been given approval by the president, I believe, to deploy 6,000 National Guardsmen. Has Barbour done that? Has Jindal done that down in Louisiana while with all the complaining that these governors have been doing about the federal response?
Both of them appear to be grandstanding more than actually responding to the spill. In Alabama and the Florida Panhandle, a massive rescue operation is in the works to save sea turtle nests on the coasts. Federal scientists will dig up some 50,000 sea turtle eggs gathered from hundreds of nests, incubate them, and then release the hatchlings on Florida's Atlantic coast. The scientists say otherwise all the hatchlings in the Gulf are likely to be killed by the oil.
We had earlier reports as well of these sea turtles being burned alive as they were doing these in situ burns, burning off the oil. Is that still occurring? Are we still losing these rare turtles because of these burns?
Yes, they're trying to do whatever they can to burn the oil before it reaches the shore, but they're trapping sea turtles at the same time. It's a terrible situation.
You think?
The federal judge who overturned the Obama administration's six-month moratorium on deepwater offshore drilling is under increasing scrutiny for his deep financial interests in the offshore oil industry because he owned stock in companies directly affected by the temporary moratorium. According to federal judiciary rules, Feldman should have recused himself and not even taken the case in the first place.
Yeah, I want to give credit to Ernest Canning over at bradblog.com. You can read his exposés on that and how Judge Feldman, on the Tuesday he made the ruling to end the moratorium, finally decided to sell off his ExxonMobil stock. Go figure. Read about that and much more at BradBlog. Our website is greennews.bradblog.com. Subscribe for free to our reports via iTunes. Have them downloaded straight to your computer. Follow us on Twitter 24/7 and listen to us on your mobile device via Stitcher Radio. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Don't know why there's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather since my man and I together.
It's your second hour in the liberal sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Eight and a half past. Thanks, of course, to Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen for their consistently excellent work with the Green News Report. Going straight to the phones in a matter of just a couple of seconds, but I want to get to a couple of emails before we do that. In particular, Maura writing in and saying, I'm writing to express how angry I am about this morning's questioning of Elena Kagan by Jefferson Beauregard, freshman of the Hood. You got to say it like that, you know. I don't know how to say it down home. Maura, however, says, that bastard treated her like a criminal. He carried on like she was a child molester. You could see the jealousy in his eyes, betraying his thoughts that, you know, how dare another liberal elite woman be nominated for associate justice and a Jewess to boot. Remember, I reiterate, this is Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III, who once said, I always thought the Klan was kind of cool till I found out they smoked the marijuana. There are moments when it's a good thing that I don't do this program with a bottle of hooch next to me. Because you know how on Bart Cop, every now and then, he'll offer somebody a toast of Chinako, and I always imagine Bart, you know, just getting through the day, and toast here, toast there. It's a good thing I did. Because it kind of makes you want to. Who put the coffee in my coffee, you know? Morris says Sessions is an embarrassment to the human race and should be censured for his conduct. Yes, he should. And it's interesting that Morris wrote that because I was flashing on something a little earlier today, and maybe somebody remind me. I think I've got an idea for how to deal with the filibuster, but going back to something Morris said, you could see the jealousy in his eyes, and Maura and the rest of you. That's precisely what it was, because the whole thing is that it was Ronald Reagan, wasn't it, who nominated Jefferson Beauregard Sessions LePoet for a federal judgeship, and he was turned down in committee because it came out what he had said about his dark-skinned co-workers. Better be careful, boy, how you talk about the white women folks around ya. Yeah, remember that? All that stuff came out when he was under consideration for a lifetime appointment to the federal judiciary. And he is jealous. He is eaten up with it. He should not be able to sit in judgment of anyone for a federal judgeship, because his bias is that deep, and his jealousy is that pernicious. Now, another email that rolled in earlier in the day, and one of the beauties of having this program not only go out live and on the rerun stream, but in podcasts so folks can listen at their leisure. This rolling in from Tom out in Richmond, California, who said, you know, you really should have been pounding the drum for $7,000, because even after the septic system's handled, you still need to fund the horn, right? Keep after it. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to press my luck. No, there was nothing lucky about it. I'm not going to press your goodwill and generosity. But Tom adds a commentary on Tony Hayward, his jetting off to watch his yacht race and yachting in general. It would appear, says Tom, that the oily Mr. Hayward can't be much of a sailor. Yachtsman, perhaps, but for crying out loud, who the hell goes to watch his boat participate in a race? And who the hell names a boat Bob? Yeah, that Bob. Like I said, I want royalties. Says Tom, though, seriously, sailing is a participatory sport, and watching a sailboat race is like watching paint dry. I should know. I've participated in probably over 1,000 sailboat races myself, own a boat myself, I hate the word yacht, and have made my living from working on sailboats in one way or another since I was 18, over 35 years now. While snotty yachting does exist, and I fear it may be making a comeback with the rise of the super rich, there has been a large, broad-based middle-class interest in boating that started with the popularization of fiberglass in the 1950s and coincided with the rise of the now dying middle class. Many of the millions of boats built in the 60s, 70s, and 80s were and are kept in socialist, county, and city-owned and operated harbors. Naturally, many of these moneymakers are now being privatized, but even still, there are a whole lot of people who own boats, belong to yacht clubs, why can't they call them sailing clubs, and work for a living. A lot of my customers are union members, truckers, welders, maintenance guys, you name it, not rich, and many of us don't know which fork to use. Of course, there are billionaires too, but not so many of them. Many of us have 25 or 35-year-old boats and scrimp and save and work overtime to keep them going. One you might consider is Jeff Levish, founder and owner of a certain New Belgium brewery. Oh, I want to be your friend, Jeff, who is at this moment about two-thirds of the way through a race from here, being Richmond, California, from here to Hawaii on his boat Hecla, and gives me a link for where you can check it out. He says, that's the biggest boat in the fleet. The smallest is a folk boat. You can pick up one for the price of a septic system or the sewer line I have to replace in a few weeks. Oh, that's a thought. One thing that a lot of us at least consider is that a relatively modest boat can be an escape pod, readily capable of intercontinental transport. I try to keep a state of readiness, able to go in a week or less. Lots of boats, yachts, are used as low-cost housing with side benefits, kind of like a mobile home, but mobile. Now, about Tony Hayward. That is no sailing enthusiast. Perhaps he's a rank beginner just dabbling in a new sport. For somebody as wealthy as an oil company CEO to have a 10-year-old 52-footer is ludicrous, especially if he doesn't sail it himself. There are lots of highly skilled people who make a living racing other people's boats. But the owner always goes along, usually gets to steer, in the non-critical parts at least. That's only a $700,000 boat. He should have the very latest $5 million carbon fiber racing machine at least. Meaning Bob, the good ship Bob, is only a $700,000 boat. And you would think the BP CEO would have the very latest $5 million carbon fiber racing machine at least. I mean, really, says Tom. I've worked on plenty of billionaires' boats, and Bob is no billionaire boat. Signed, Horn Yachting Correspondent, Tom, in Richmond, California. Thank you, Tom. And thanks for the education. God, that would be wonderful. To be out on the open water and, oh, well, yeah. And what he says is true, because there were a lot of people I remember growing up on the Tennessee River, a lot of ordinary folk, ordinary by my lights, you know, working class. And yeah, they had boats that they, and I don't mean, you know, bass boats. Do you see a bass? I seen a bass. Let's go. I think it's a smallie. No, these were boats with sails, and they were beautiful, beautiful out on Wilson Lake on a late summer's afternoon. A guy I worked with was into it early in my early days of radio. So thanks to Tom for the little education and pointing out and isn't it always the way? You know, it's people who have much, but themselves, within themselves, they possess much but have little in terms of their own spirit. And they fill those holes with what? $1 million paid to Elton John, or $500,000 paid to Jimmy Buffett for your ex-wife's birthday party on a Greek island. Remember that? Or a $15,000 umbrella stand, or a $10,000 shower curtain. Yeah. That is what? Spiritual caulk to plug the seeping holes. Says Ron in Raleigh, in regard to the yacht Bob. Remember how Rowan Atkinson pronounced Bob in the episode of Blackadder when he fell for his cross-dressing manservant? I think that's how his Nibs pronounces his yacht, Bob. I won't even attempt it. Thanks, Ron. Let's roll here to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, long time no call.
Reverbo, what's up, brother?
Well, while I was waiting for my weenies to defrost, I thought I'd check in. Because, well, your topic kind of ticked me off.
Am I in trouble again?
No. It's just another, you know, how much more proof do we need that one of our political parties doesn't really care much about us after we're born?
Well, here, and you know, why don't, and the larger question that I put, why doesn't the other particular political party have the stones to stand up and say, look, they're bastards?
Why don't they point that out? I know. I don't understand that. I mean, my war would have been the Vietnam War, and we were pretty vociferous about protesting that. Well, really for the same reasons that people, would legitimately have a beef with all these damn wars. It's not the soldiers you are protesting, it's the foreign policy that you just can't stand. And, you know, I think most people should be careful to make that distinction. I mean, sure, you're going to get your Sergeant Callies and you're going to get your My Lai massacres. Well, God damn, that's crap that's going on in Iraq and Afghanistan now. There's so many innocent people dying. It's just disgusting. But you got to be careful not to. You got to get mad at the right people. And that's the thing. I don't understand how much more proof do you need? Why don't these folks that just keep sending these men back to back to government. It's just stunningly stupid.
It is literally to fall back on Wallace Shawn in the Princess Bride, inconceivable.
It is inconceivable.
Oh, the bell, know. The bell. I feel like I drew out the bells. I missed the bell reverbo.
Well, I've been writing. I haven't been talking. But the point I want to make, it's not about me, but it is about me. I have made a decision in my life that about soldiers and about warriors that, damn, I don't think, can you find me a more noble profession than that? I mean, can you find me people like a more self-sacrificing, a more selfless occupation than being a soldier?
No, especially not in the defense of home and hearth.
I mean, these guys aren't there, you know, in the proverbial hallowed halls when war is declared. They're home waiting for their weenies to defrost. And these guys aren't there, you know, on the Missouri when they sign the unconditional surrender. You know, they don't get to take part in any of that. All they get to do is get their ass shot at. That's what they get to do. And I
one of those Lord Earl something or another poets say something to the effect of ours is not to question why, ours is but to do and die. And there's another line in there about onward into the valley of death, row the 400. Do I recall that aright?
Is that Alfred Lord Tennyson?
I do believe.
Yeah, you have that right, and that's the life of the that's the grunt. That's why they call them grunts. And I mean, you don't know how terrified we were about the prospect of going to Vietnam. I mean, I don't mind telling you and anybody who's listening, I was scared shitless. But what I got to do, if I got to stay in college, I got a 2S deferment. So as long as I stayed in college, I was draft proof. But just think about our friends here, our legislators from Oklahoma and Texas and South Carolina. And let's think about, let's go back to that time. Just how many Okies were in those rice paddies, do you imagine, Bob?
Oh, bunch.
A bunch.
I know a certain Texas boy who was, yeah.
Yeah, you think a lot of those boys were busy studying for their PhD in physics, or you think they were getting handed an M16 and some boots?
What was that? What was that little song they used to? What was that little song they used to sing for the noobs when they got off the plane? You'll come home in a body bag, doo da. Doo-dah.
Yeah, it's hilarious. But, I mean, for every inner-city kid, you know, that got chucked in a plane over to Vietnam, he was sitting right next to one of these oil rig boys. I mean, and so the point here is that memories evidently are pretty damn short. And if we had a draft, none of this would be happening, of course. People would be totally outraged, you know. But as long as we have a volunteer army, and unemployment at, you know, 35%
And remember, those volunteer military members are off the rolls and not considered for unemployment. I mean, are considered. That was one of those things that, I almost got that backwards, Reverbo. That was one of those things that Ronald Reagan dummied up. He started counting the military in the unemployment numbers. In other words, the volunteer military counted toward him being able to say, well, unemployment is falling because I've driven the deficit through the godforsaken roof, building up a military in case the Soviets decide to invade across Alaska. Or remember the Sandinistas were going to cross the Rio Grande?
Yeah, I remember that. That never happened, though, did it?
No, somehow it didn't.
Huh.
Although I'm sure if you ask Michelle Bachmann or Steve King or any of those other freaks, that's really what those Mexican immigrants are, those undocumented immigrants. It's all sleeper cells of the Sandinistas.
Yeah. And we never did end up speaking Russian, wearing snow boots, did we? None of this ever happened. Huh?
But boy, some people made a lot of money on it, huh?
Yeah, nice grease.
Man, oh man, there's nothing like a little war. But I mean, look at this. Here are these people whose sons and daughters in another time were just getting, I mean, here you can't get them over to Vietnam fast enough. And here we, once again, once you come home, they just treat you like junk mail, just like trash. And you still vote for them. I mean, okay.
Now, see, yeah, there's where we enter the real philosophical quicksand, Reverbo. And you still vote for them.
Yeah, you explain it to me.
Now, sorry, I'm no good with that. I'm utterly useless for it. This is what makes it a struggle. You reckon Patty Murray's little story from what she introduced, because, you know, that, and I don't say this negatively, but we are in a nation that has made a cult of its military. You know, GI stands for General Issue. Well, General Issue is something that you have for conscripts, as far as I'm concerned. And when you've got a GI military and everybody's shouldering some of the load, let's consider World War II, for instance.
Sure.
Then you have a melting pot within a melting pot, and that's actually good for America, because suddenly the guy from the Bronx learns to actually interpret the Deep South Alabama for his buddy from the UP of Michigan.
Well,
and vice versa.
A country declares war, and the whole country should go fight. Yeah, I mean, we sacrifice all of us. Used to, not anymore, of course.
And yet, so having said that, there is in modern America with the all volunteer military, Reverbo, we have made a cult of the military itself. And, of course, that's one of those defining characteristics of fascism, by the way. I was walking through a store earlier today, and something... this is one of those little diversions that you do to me. But I saw hanging on a rack in a local retail joint that was not Walmart a T-shirt, and it had a big... It had a big old bald eagle flying right off the shirt and some red, white, and blue behind it. And it looked like something straight off the Stephen Colbert show. And it said, Land of the Free, Merca. And I had one of those throwback moments, because I hearkened back to my childhood when the T-shirts we wore had a great big finger pointing one way or the other, and over the top it said, I'm with stupid. I don't remember being a kid, and this is not, you know, throw the blanket over Bob's legs and wheel him over next to the fire for his dotage. But I don't remember being a kid and having jingoistic, nationalistic T-shirts.
I do a little. I remember in the late 60s there were decency rallies, and some of those were kind of revolved around, you know, I remember that you could get a flag decal and you could put it on your car, your little vent window if you had it on upside down. That was kind of a signal to other kids that you were against the war, and There was that. It wasn't like it is now. God, for a minute, I just flashed on that Okie from Muskogee song. I mean, what more do these people want to hear? What more do they need? 25% of the Democrats. Let's just write them off. I hate to do this, but we're going to have to. 25% of them have sold us out, have sold us out. They've sold us down the river. So that still maybe leaves, I don't know, three quarters of them.
Is that the same 25% that ain't sure if an Obama ain't sure? Well, just they may not know what country he was born in, but they damn sure he wasn't born here.
No, and they know who's writing the checks for their reelection campaigns. But people, 100% of the Republicans are useless. 100%.
Yeah. Every last one of them. from Tom Coburn to Mitch McConnell to Michelle Bachmann to Steve King to Joe Barton to Addison Joe Wilson, the whole rotten bunch.
Newt and his whole incestuous gang.
And the horse they rode in on.
There ain't a one that's worth a damn. Well, there ain't a one that cares about you. This is a fascinating concept. How do you keep reelecting them? Well, I think one thing might be that they make it very difficult, since these people have, let's just stick them in the geography that, all right, let's just go here. We know what part of the country most of them are in. And so the folks who would be voting them out are somewhat easily intimidated by tactics and strategies that make it hard to vote. Like, oh, gee, we didn't deliver all those voting machines to the inner city like we promised.
You're right.
Or whoops, a big long line down here. Looks like these machines broke. That's what they do. Otherwise, I never could understand it, because the population, the Democratic population of these states, you would think would be huge. And yet, look at South Carolina. How does this happen? It happens because they cheat.
And you know, where's the... This is not facetious. Where, Reverbo, is the ivory tower, pointy-headed, intellectual, sociological study of why this phenomenon takes place? Not kidding.
Pretty serious stuff to me.
Well, and to me too, because you remember that study that did come out a few years ago that followed kindergartners up to like age 30?
No.
And they found that the children that they had documented in infancy as being fussy and crybabies and whiners at age 30 were rock-ribbed conservative Republicans, whereas the children that were happy and well-adjusted and wanted to get along were liberals.
Well, yes, like we know, the honorable road to that new bicycle is along the Wee Road, not the Me Road, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, well, we're back. I mean, it's 2010. What is the date today? It's June 29th, 2010. And it might as well be just after the Civil War. I'm crazy. You know, another thing that's nuts is like Sandra would say, why is this even an issue? Of course we should be helping homeless veterans. That's the absurd part.
May I interrupt and disagree a little bit, Reverbo, to suggest that the real absurdity lies in this idea that it makes me crazy. I'm spitting all over the microphone. This idea that, well, it might be a good idea if we could pay for it up front, but, you know, we're broke.
Well, that was designed too. You run up the deficit, you lose, that you get a president from another party. Reform is impossible.
But shouldn't, I mean, if these people, see, we're going to run up against that thing about 100% don't give a damn.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to start a war, isn't part of the pre-war planning what you're going to do with your wounded? And even, and don't you consider things called worst-case scenarios, no matter how loudly Donald Rumsfeld is screaming from his stand-up desk while that Raphael is in the corner painting his $50,000 portrait. Even though he's standing there screaming, we will be greeted as liberators, isn't it responsible from a military standpoint to say, what if we're not? What if they shoot back? What do we do with our hurt people and how do we care for them?
Yeah, what if they think we're like invaders and hate us and want to kill us? I don't understand. I don't get it. Again, we're back to the soldier being this poor slob. You remember, I don't know how just totally, I was stunned by this. Remember when they discovered that Walter Reed Hospital or what was it?
Rats, spiders, bugs, peeling paint, mold.
Crap. It's like goo, like coming down the walls onto the wounds of soldiers.
Well, yeah, like something out of the Amityville Horror.
Yeah, or Stephen King of Novel. I mean, what are you people kidding? This guy just went and shot at somebody for you. Well, not for you, for what's that company, the Cheney, for Halliburton. He went over there for ExxonMobil or Halliburton or your Kellogg Brown and Roots. He did a little work for you, so your stock profits can look better. And now let me understand this, now he is starving under a bridge, and you don't give a damn. I don't know. It just ticked me off.
Because I think I know you well enough after a couple of years of these kind of conversations. I think you were trying to speak with a modicum of even-handedness when you say ticked me off.
Yeah, and I
infuriates.
Yeah, how about that?
Blood in eyes. Yeah.
I may not have articulated my position like I like to, but again, this is
how dare they tell an entire class of wounded veterans to go Cheney themselves?
Look, all of this.
And why? Okay, let me just throw, because maybe we already covered it. Why does such a stance, why does such a political position not come with a political cost in a country that has fetishized its military? And I guess the question I didn't ask is, you know, the dudes running up and down whatever province of Afghanistan or you know, back and forth from Mosul in Iraq or whatever, do they ever get these news stories in Stars and Stripes? Do they ever open it up and go, well, fuck, are you running?
God, I've got to give up. What do you think?
No, I'm thinking no, they don't.
Yeah, I'm thinking no. I'm thinking they've got, when they go turn on the TV in the mess hall, it's Fox, and when the radio comes on, it's Rush, is what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Well, it has to be. Otherwise, well, it's obvious, right? Otherwise, they go, screw this.
Well, I mean, look at the hard sell I got over phone cards that I mentioned on the show last night. I don't know if you were listening. But, you know, I'm getting browbeaten by a telemarketer because I tell him I can't afford to pay $250 to give $50 phone cards to five members of the military, to the West Virginia Air National Guard.
Oh, and then he pulled out his 9/11 card.
Yeah, and then he whipped out some 9/11 on me.
Yeah, these people are shameless. Well, I agree with you. If this is the psychology of it, if this is how it's going to be, and Lord knows it's been this way for a long time, war is a racket, we know that, then I would think that the returning soldier would be put on a pedestal, I mean, as high as the sky. Why they would never have to suffer. They would never, their lives would never be a struggle. Why does this even come up with a vote? And I think, you think it all goes back to the essence of the problem here, and that is we're such a mean damn country, a pull them up by the bootstraps kind of thing. There's other countries that can't even believe. Like, I don't know. I think I may have got this. If I got this wrong, I apologize. But I think isn't the minimum wage in Australia like 15, 16 bucks an hour?
I will have to defer to John Fox for that. He'll hear that in a minute and he'll tell me.
All right. Well, that's for sure. It is in Denmark or Sweden. These countries that have it figured out, so we don't have to vote on any extra money for the homeless veteran. So you're making, with a 50% tax bracket for everybody, minimum wage is 15, you're left with 8. Well, no, hold on. You're left with 750, but you have all these safety nets. You don't die under a bridge. But not in America. No, no, not here. Here we still, the minimum wage is $7.50, and we have nothing.
Yeah, if that $7.50 doesn't do it, you know, tough luck, soldier.
Well, of course it doesn't do it. I mean, that's where the whole Medicare for All thing, the single payer, all of that. Just
yeah, don't spend it all in one place, Buster.
Yeah, I mean, hey, easy on those Slim Jims there, Chief. We'll have more tomorrow. Yeah, I mean, that's...
Eat all you want. We'll make more.
Bob, this country is just mean. Was it always this mean?
And I don't know the answer to that, Reverbo.
I don't remember
it being that way in my youth, but that may be through the hazy golden lens of me looking backwards.
Well, it was also the 50s and the 60s when, you know, things were looking up, things were prosperous, for at least for the majority of people.
You know, my dad getting frustrated because we'd leave here going back to Alabama, and my grandmother here he'd look at me, you know, when my mother was out of earshot and say, my mother-in-law intends to load this vehicle down with provisions until the tailpipe drags the roads and drags the road and the springs give out. And she did. And it wasn't like we were going home to starvation, but it was how she was. And it's how everybody around here was. You know, they're going back to Alabama. We don't know if they have food down there. Let's make sure they get several quarts of canned blackberries and some canned peaches. And by God, down there to the general store, let's get them one of those good hams, because we don't know if they got good ham down there or not. I don't remember this level of meanness. And frankly, you know, and it wasn't, because when LBJ started talking about the Great Society, Reverbo, it was an express disavowal of mean-spiritedness. And even though the right wing was still in existence, and God knows they hated it, and the John Birchers screamed communism, but you know, they're part of that 25%. They're goddamn idiots. And so they were written off as such, but all of a sudden the inmates have the keys to the asylum. We're the ones performing Marat Sade down in the damn dungeon.
Well, we made them copies. I don't
Yeah,
I don't
pressed know. Them in wax. Here, you want these?
I don't get it. It just seems to be, I don't remember that either, but maybe, like you say, we were distracted and things weren't.
But no, see, that's it, Reverbo, that's it. We were distracted. You want to know how we were distracted? I remember a political ad, and maybe it had the opening strains from a Bugs Bunny cartoon or Tchaikovsky's 1812 overture. Remember the... And the voiceover, and the sun's coming up over the ridge. It's morning in America again, because Ronald Reagan is Jesus Christ.
Wow.
And that was the distraction. Oh, it's morning in America? Okay, and we've beaten the Russians? Well, three cheers and a tiger for us, we have won. And, okay, if everything's all right again, then let's start treating each other like crap. Is that how it plays out? Is that how it works?
Well, it's not all right, though. I think they're trying to finish us off. I think they think they've had a mild setback with this with Obama getting the White House.
I got audio here that I can't stand to subject you to, Reverbo, of a CNBC program called the Squawk Box from yesterday. And it features that goober, with all due respect to George Lindsay, Rick Santelli.
Sorry, I had to give a bell for goober.
Yeah, well, hey to goober. And Rick Santelli's the guy who basically gave the on-air public birth announcement of the teabaggers, if you recall. And rather than run the audio of it, because it's so odious, it's called the Squawk Box, and it's a bunch of people screaming at each other. It's just annoying as hell. And into the mix, a contributor by the name of Steve Leisman asks Let me get of the right wingers. Let me get this straight. All you guys want to cut taxes en route to bringing down the deficit. And immediately he's cut off, and Santelli starts screaming. I mean, you know, coming unglued, you know, hopping up and down, tearing at his hair, kind of. No, I didn't say anything about taxes, Steve. I want the government to stop spending, stop spending, stop spending, stop spending, stop spending. And he said it that many times, Reverbo. That's what we want, stop spending. And then this goon named Nielsen pops in and says, and cut the capital gains spending, cut capital gains, cut capital, make it 0% and see what happens.
Yeah, let's just turn the banks loose. Let's just turn everybody loose. That'll be great for everybody.
How long until the banksters and the wingnuts are marching up and down Wall Street chanting, Somalia, Somalia, so, you know, Haiti, we want to be, Haiti, we want to be. How long? Because that's what they're doing.
I'm telling you, their plan is to finish us off. They didn't quite get it done. Damn, where is George Carlin when you need him? Where's Kurt Vonnegut when you need him? Or Frank Zappa? Hunter Thompson! I'm torn between maybe these men are in a better place. Well, Kurt Vonnegut isn't, because he, like me.
No, I'm thinking he was the one that was welcomed with open arms.
But, he was sort of surprised if that happened.
Right, Stan. Me? Really? Me? Yeah.
I remember.
And oh, I'm sorry. I'm riffing. And go get Mr. Clemens. Oh my God! But yeah, it was. Come on in, Kurt. Yeah, we'll have a cigar.
Go get H.L. Mencken while you're at it.
Yeah.
I mean, every single night. I don't. You know, I think I'm a little older than you.
A little bit.
The 60s may have been more my decade, and perhaps the 70s yours. But talk about a decade of distractions. Man, I wouldn't trade the 60s for any of them. That you had, it gave you everything you wanted. But I remember every night.
And then it all burned down in the 70s, and I got handed leisure suits and Lycra shirts.
Yep, hopefully a nice peach-colored leisure suit, too.
My Lycra shirt was silver, and it had a pirate ship on back.
But you see, the world ended in December 31st, 1969. So you were already in the afterlife.
I was thinking it ended, you know, once Jim, Jimmy, and Janice were gone.
I was going to say every single night, though, on either Huntley Brinkley or Walter Cronkite, we heard how many soldiers died, and we got films of those.
Yes, soldiers,
and we got battle films.
Right, I think I touched on that a few nights ago, Reverbo. You know, stunning battle footage of something going on somewhere sort of dark tan and dusty colored and mud bricky in Afghanistan that looked like it was more fitting for a Rudyard Kipling set than for anything with an American flag on it. But it was described as, we bring you now this stunning battlefield footage. Nothing like it has been filed. And I'm thinking, really? Ed Bradley? Wasn't it? Just because it's dry, don't, you know, jungle, desert, death, jungle, death, desert, same death. But we got it every night in our living rooms. That's why Vietnam was the living room war. And that's why Afghanistan is well on the way to being the forgotten war. They're hoping we forget. They want us to forget. They'd like it if we didn't know we were there. Let me throw something at you real quick that's completely off the beaten path and at a total tangent, but it's cultural and you do that kind of thing, Reverbo.
This is the first time this has ever happened. Oh yeah, go ahead.
the other night, I watched a BBC documentary called "In the Footsteps of Alexander." And, you know, I've been all hopped up and crazy on Alexander the Great ever since we went into Afghanistan in a sort of negative fashion in terms of this is not going to work out well. But in the course of, and in this documentary that was shot in 1997 in the sort of little, not really peaceful, but you could get around there sort of time, the writer, director, whatever, Michael Wood, and I'm sure somebody hates his guts, But he's going through Afghanistan, and he's pointing out what Alexander had to deal with in terms of the various factions and various tribes as he went through. And, you know, if somebody was accommodating to the Greeks, then another tribe would come and knock them off and that kind of thing. And I'm sitting there scratching my head going, well, nothing's changed. And then the light went on, Reverbo. What if factionalism and tribalism and constantly shifting loyalties and no permanent, stable form of unifying government, what if that's the natural order of things in that place? And I'm not trying to be elitist or anything, but what if that's the natural order of things? What if that's the way the world works there? What if that, over the course of 5 or 10,000 years, has proven to be the only way that people have any hope whatsoever of living out anything approaching an age? What if that delicate balance is all there is? What if that tribal structure, never mind Islam, Buddhism, whatever went through there, when it went through there, never mind any of that. What if that tribalism is the norm? What then does that say, Reverbo, about our attempt to superimpose some Western style of normalcy on it? Because I heard today the confirmation hearings, which as opposed to Elena Kagan's were a cakewalk for General Petraeus.
Petraeus, yeah.
And they said, you know, what does it mean to win? And all. And he said, you know, we want to have a stable government, and we want to have a place where the Taliban can never come back and come into power.
Yeah.
And I made the same sort of noises coming down the road. But I thought, what if the Taliban are supposed to be there? You know, everybody, especially the right wing, looks at women in burqas, which I find, you know, disgusting and odious, and making sure that the women folk can't learn to read and stay all barefoot and stuff. But they look at especially the right wingers, you know, your Jerry Boykins of the world. Well, you know, Islam worships a devil god. And they think that the burqa is a function of Islam, when in fact, there's everything in the world to suggest that it isn't. That every bit of what we think is absolute brutal repression and chaos is actually the natural order of things that predates, well, hell, it predates Zoroastrianism, let alone Islam. What if what we're doing over there is screwing with what is actually normal to them? Because Alexander dealt with all of it.
And he didn't win, did he?
And he didn't win either.
No. Well, I don't know. I think we should give it more time. I like this thesis, but I don't know. I think we should send over some more troops, do a little more shooting, and I think that the jury's still out on this, Bob. I don't think 10,000 years is enough.
Yeah, let's give it another 10. Let's give it another 100.
Again, if you all are thinking we do this to spread democracy, you know, I mean, I got a couple of, what do they call, mules to sell Eskimos or whatever that phrase is.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Sure. Well, all we want to do is get that place stabilized so that we can rip off their resources, that's all. We want to get our... Wait a minute. Let's back up a second.
Backing up.
Bin Laden is still running around loose, isn't he?
Best intelligence we had, according to what's his name that appeared on Sunday on What's Its Program, the CIA director, Leon Panetta. Best intel we had on Osama bin Laden was about the year 2000. We really haven't heard from him since.
Okay. So all this running around shooting and stuff we're doing, again, what's the enemy? We really haven't. I mean, let's put him aside for a second. So we haven't caught him. We don't even know where he is. I thought, and we want to establish some sort of presence in the Middle East because, well, hell, we're still glued to the, we're still glued to the oil pump. So I thought we did that in Iraq. Now we're getting out of Iraq, and now we're moving into Afghanistan. We're going to set up base operations in Afghanistan. because it's between Pakistan
and the Caspian Sea Basin.
And the Caspian Sea Basin. There's a lot of resources there, ain't there?
Bunches.
Yeah.
Maybe BP would like to drill.
Well, hey, democracy, hell with that. They're using the money, by the way, that we used, the hot check that we wrote the communist Chinese. they're paying off drug warlords so that our convoys can have a safe passage through their country. So that's the way that democracies work. Kind of the way it works, you know, in the mafia. So, I don't know. People, you know, it's one thing, I suppose, where do you cut it off? I mean, they cut off the unemployment benefits for people who are getting near the end, right?
They're screwing down deeper into deeper, ever deeper levels of people to F.
Well, no, I'm telling you, they're trying to finish us off, and some people are not going to go down without a fight if that's the case.
Yeah.
And I heard the word on the street is that if you're middle-aged and unemployed, you're not even going to get a job. They'll just throw your application in a trash can. That there's a collusion going on. Collusion?
Yeah, and by the way, just to throw you the statistic you were asking for earlier, John has let me know that the national minimum wage in Australia is $569.90 Australian per week, calculated on the basis of a 38 ordinary work hour week, which comes out to $15 per hour, rounded to the nearest 10 cents. Score one for your side. Yeah, $15 an hour.
And I will gladly give you half of that, half of my wages, so that I don't starve under a bridge. So that I never die because I got cold, and I never had to declare bankruptcy because I got sick.
And I don't know, I don't even know how much of that gets eaten up in taxes. Because unless I'm wrong, unless I'm severely wrong, they still have something. It's a bit of an economically philosophical dinosaur there, Reverbo. But I think they still have something called progressive taxation. Now they've got an incredibly regressive general sales tax, but they do have a progressive taxation scheme. So maybe you're not getting $7.50 of that eaten up.
Well,
but we in America can't do, and this is the average. So as many as make this, there's one making more and one making less. We can't even find it in our souls to do $309 a week for a guy who's or woman who's been thrown out of their jobs. Remember, uniquely American, three jobs, holding down, lose them all, who's lost their jobs. We ain't even got $309 a week for those people.
I'm with Sandra. I don't understand what these people... I'm eating dinner tonight. I'm going to eat dinner tomorrow night and the night after. I don't have a job, but I have a little money saved up. But exactly what are people supposed to do who aren't going to eat dinner tonight?
I don't have an answer.
I wish
to God Mrs. Kucinich had made the call in this evening.
Well, I mean,
because I'd like to hear about the school lunch program.
I don't mean to pick on Africa or pick on South America or pick on any other countries, but man, oh man, the last place I thought would turn into such a heartless wilderness was the United States of America.
Well, yeah, because we're a Christian nation.
Well, sure.
We got Jeebus.
Oh, man, I don't want to hear these people. I don't want to hear one more word from any of these bastards about Jesus or Christianity or any of it.
But you know what? It's an election year, and you're not only going to hear one more word, you're going to hear whole vomitous mouthfuls. The folks at Think Progress dot org found some audio of Sharon Angle of Nevada. You know, the woman who's going up against Harry Reid?
Yeah.
She did a radio interview, and she hadn't quite learned how to shut up yet. And the guy interviewing her asked her this question, and you know, talk about loading the blunderbuss. Is there any reason at all for an abortion? Sharon Angle.
Not in my book.
Interviewer. So, in other words, rape and incest would not be something? Sharon Angle.
You know, I'm a Christian, and I believe that God has a plan and a purpose for each one of our lives, and that he can intercede in all kinds of situations, and we need to have a little faith in many things.
You're making me ill.
You started it.
Hey, anybody can run for dog catcher. You just don't have to vote them in. You can get up there and make a total fool of yourself if that's what you want to do.
But this woman is at risk of being elected to the Senate of the United States, where she says her job is not to create jobs or bring industry to Nevada. Or anywhere else, for that matter. Unless
They're
maybe
trying.
It's China.
They're trying to finish us off. I'm convinced of this.
You're beginning to feel a little like Yossarian, aren't you?
First, they...
Oh, tell me, I don't get a ding for Yossarian?
No, you don't. Because I was already distracted and was at my next thing. They already ripped off half of our savings in our retirement. Right?
Yeah.
I had $100 put in. I worked for 30 years and I had $100. And they turned the banks loose and they just ripped off 50 of that. That's swell. I was about like 3 years left before retirement, and now I guess I have to work for the rest of my worthless life. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you get the ding on that one.
I don't know. The bell's only for special occasions. So let's see. We have millions of people lost half of their money. Then we have no real safety nets here, so at some point unemployment's going to run out. Not everybody even gets that. Depending on, you know, what demographic you're in, the unemployment rate is, Jesus God, 35%.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some...
Yeah, and to extend my metaphor, we have been... All we've got left is an inflatable rubber raft, and we'd better row like hell for Sweden.
Well, yeah. I mean, there are no jobs. So this idea that you can just go out and get a job is absurd. They're not hiring people who are unemployed.
Well, you know, that's because the Mexicans are taking all the good ones.
Oh, they're gray ones.
Well, Sharon Angle again, you know, she said the problem with the American people is that they're spoiled.
Yeah, that's it. I wanted to grow up.
They don't want to take the jobs that are out there.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to grow up. My mom wanted me to grow up to make beds at hotels. Yeah, those are wonderful jobs. Look, I'm not knocking a job. It's just there's 1,000 people showing up when there's 2 hotel maid jobs open. They're trying to finish us off. I don't want to keep saying that, but I think it's true.
I think you're right. And by the way, just by way of extension, the tax-free threshold in Australia is quite high. The tax itself is higher. But John says, you know, we have services like, well, you know, Medicare for everybody.
Right. That's my point. You're so does Ireland. So does Denmark. If when times are tough, you don't. Now, I guess those people are really up against it. And, yeah, the bankers damn near came close to destroying some of those countries, too. You can't, but let's just leave that aside for a while.
Well, and remember, we're going to do some global belt tightening now, Reverbo.
Well, that's a huge mistake. Then we're heading into the third Great Depression.
In which, and that's because there is an element globally, because we're talking about transnational corporations and, frankly, transnational citizens. They are citizens of their corporations and not of any given nation state. We are at a transitional moment. The nation state may be finished, Reverbo, because the next step in all of this belt tightening is to take the system that is working well in Australia, or take the system that's working well in Sweden or Denmark, or the hybrid system that's working quite well, thank you very much, in Germany.
Or France.
And take it the hell away.
Yeah.
break it, bust it, because one of the key tenets of globalism is that globalism will be good for everybody because everybody's going to be on a level playing field. Well, nobody ever, the magician never, you're always looking at the bird in the hand and not the one that's picking your pocket. And what they're not telling us out loud is that, yeah, everybody's going to be on a level playing field. And the level playing field is the playing field that is presently occupied by that guy chained to the table in Myanmar making sweaters for 5 cents a day.
I was going to suggest that level playing field is the gutter.
Same.
Same thing. Why don't they ever invite, I don't know, James Galbraith? Or Joseph Stiglitz, or I don't know, Paul Krugman, to these economic meetings that they have.
You want to hear something that's going to make you scream and run away from the phone?
I love when that happens. Yeah.
Okay, I read you the transcript of these screaming idiots on CNBC with the stop spending, right? I read you that. I didn't read you the punchline.
There's a punchline?
Yeah. So the guy who sent them into their apoplectic frenzies says to him, I just keep saying what the data show, and the data show that the tax cuts don't pay for themselves. By the way, and he gets cut off again with Santelli screaming, oh, you wouldn't know data if it bit you on the nose. And the other right winger says, boo. And then Santelli says, go read some Austrian economist instead of the funny pages.
God, do you ever read that the greatest cartoon going out there now is Tom Tomorrow. It's called This Modern World.
Oh, I live for it.
Yeah. Well, you just describe a real life version of This Modern World.
Yeah, your work's done for this week.
Good Lord, the guy doesn't have to think anything.
Go read some Austrian economist. And remember, I think we talked about this. That Austrian economist is the darling of the libertarian set, the Rand Pauls and the Ron Pauls and those the freakish creatures, and his institute is housed at Auburn, Alabama. What was his name? Von den Lindenschlagen,
I may have run into him. I can't.
And it's all about if you just screw the workers enough, it'll turn into a capitalist paradise.
It'll certainly turn into a corporatist paradise. Let's not give capitalism a bad name here, folks. What we're talking about is profiteering.
Yeah.
We're talking about fascism. We're talking about corporatism. All those good words. We're not talking capitalism's fine.
Right, but that's the word they use because they've done a dandy good job holding capitalism out for the world to see while the anarcho Randian other hand is picking the pockets.
Oh, sure. I don't know what is going to happen around here, because I keep bringing up Sanders just because I'm in love with Sanders, but she's coming up with these scenarios that I have been reading about too. Are they just pretty much? Are we all just going to be like the new norm, the new baseline? Is
the acceptable permanent underclass.
There you go. It's all.
But the question is, and I think we're going to have to delve into it at a later date and a later time, and maybe more voices involved with it. Is the idea of a permanent underclass necessarily a new one? Because a dear friend of ours, yours and mine, with whom you spent some time in Old Mexico,
indeed,
is suggesting. That permanent underclass is nothing new, and that what we are seeing is a sort of retooling high-tech version of it.
Well,
so worth examination.
It is, and in closing, I guess another way of saying that would be, I keep thinking about the things that I've written, and I got one I'm going to read from the archives I'm going to put up for the 4th of July. I've just got to find just the right graphic for it. But, Bob, it's all variations on a theme.
Yeah, it is.
This is nothing new.
It's just got different clothes and maybe a different accent, and it is, shall we say, electronically enhanced.
But, folks, it's time to really start biting back. It's really past time to be putting up a squawk here.
What's that line? Make it personal?
I don't know. Dying under a bridge because you're too cold. It's about as personal as it gets. I mean, and here I am thinking, you know, boy, am I glad I was not a soldier.
And by the way, David in Tennessee reminding me that the Austrian I'm after is Ludwig von Mises.
What?
The von Mises Institute of Auburn, Alabama. Do a little research and then do a little screaming. It'll won't do you any good. By the way, William writing in to say, I can't say this country was always this bad and ugly. I do know when I started working for actual money in 1966, there was on-the-job training. All you needed was a high school education, and hell, I don't even know if we had health insurance. But still, in 1971, I was working as a draftsman for $138 a week, and I had to go to the emergency room. My girlfriend, roommate, drove me there because my balls had swelled to the size of Florida oranges, and I was in and out of it, and it cost next to nothing for a shot of pills. Yeah.
Yeah, well, those days are gone. And, I don't know. I don't like it. I don't like it one bit. And, no, the Dow Jones, just to leave you on another fun note, I think lost almost 300 points today.
3.1% on the S&P 500, thank you very much.
Well, are we below 10,000?
Didn't see the actual number.
It did dip below at some point today. I mean, this can't, this is not going to sustain itself.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average, according to the New York Times, was off almost 270 points and fell below 9,900, not just below 10,000.
And now everybody wants to start cutting back on the on stimulating things, right when we need it the most.
Exactly.
Well, all right. Well, you have a good evening then.
I couldn't be any happier. I'm gonna go have me some rainbow pie.
I forgot how much fun it is talking to you. God, I just feel like...
See, you're not allowed to just be the op-ed columnist for the Horn.
I don't know. I don't know why the soldiers got me mad tonight, but... Because, again, I was so lucky I wasn't one. But I do empathize with those poor guys.
Indeed.
All right. Have a good show.
Take care, Reverbo. Make it personal. Later, brother. Bye now. We're going to take a little break real quick. A couple of emails rolling in just to add information to the stockpile. Robert in Australia writing in and says, we have the dole, what you might call unemployment insurance, but it doesn't expire. I can't understand just leaving people to die under bridges. Me neither. He says, I'm on disability and receive about $600 a fortnight. That means 2 weeks to the Americans. Which is fine, excluding rising rents. I receive about $2,000 worth of medications a month for $5.80 contribution. My car is registered, road tax, for free. I still have to pay for maintenance and insurance. I see my doctor every 6 weeks for free, understanding that that comes out of taxation. And I still pay tax because of the GST, which is in its general sales tax, which is in itself regressive. But Robert says, all in all, I can't complain and never will again. Lots of you writing in, Ludwig von Mises. Thanks, Jason. That's our boy. This from Jim. He said, did not an American president specify care for the widows and orphans of those who have borne the battle? Did not an American president specify care for the widows and orphans? He says, it's worth mentioning because the quote, care for the widows and orphans of those who have borne the battle, comes from the second inaugural address of Abraham Lincoln, who, by the way, has been co-opted by a weird-ass libertarian right-winger, the same guy who was talking to George Washington and had the guy, as Keith Olbermann noted, in the $4 wig say, gather your armies. And now he's got a guy in an Abe Lincoln Halloween costume telling him that paying taxes is the equivalent of slavery. Again, as Keith Olbermann noted, when Lincoln was the first person to institute an income tax. David in Tennessee noting, yeah, libertarians think oldie Ludwig von Mises beschat ice cream, and they lap it up as such. Reminding, remember the good old days when the worst outcome for a young person was digging ditches, as in, you better study or you'll wind up digging ditches. Says David, you did well in high school to avoid that. How many today would stand in line to grab the pick and the shovel? Oh, I don't know. If you announced that you had 500 ditch-digging jobs, 10,000 people would show up, and that's the daggum reality. It's where we live. It's what we are. It's who we are. So we'll take a quick break and come back. Given that Reverbo gave mention to this, and David in Tennessee was quick on the grab with it, yeah, this is perfect. This is just perfect. Then again, Merle Haggard had a way of being like that. This is The Horn, America's liberal voice.
We don't smoke marijuana in Muskogee. We don't take our trips on LSD. We don't burn our draft cards down on Main Street. We like living right, being free. We don't make a party out of loving. We like holding hands and pitching woo. We don't let our hair grow long and shaggy like the hippies out in San Francisco do. And I'm proud to be an Okie from Muskogee, a place where even squares can have a ball. We still wave old glory down at the courthouse, and white lightning's still the biggest thrill of all. Leather boots are still in style for manly footwear. Beads and Roman sandals won't be seen. Football's still the roughest thing on campus. And the kids here still respect the college dean.
All together, everybody.
I'm proud to be an Okie from Muskogee.
Thank you.
A place where even squares can have a ball. We still wave old glory down at the courthouse, by golly. And white lightning's still the biggest thrill of all. We still wave old glory down at the courthouse in Muskogee, Oklahoma, USA.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Just one question, as noted by Reverbo. What the hell's wrong with making a party out of loving? Just asking. You know, because I'm weird that way. It's 20 minutes past the hour, and we are joined based upon data arising from the previous conversation. We are joined by webmaster, web designer, jack of all trades, host of All Foxed Up, and correspondent on the other side of the planet, John Fox. Are you there, brother?
Hey, man.
I'm here, you're there, and I've got audio.
Hey, all right. Well, I rang in, I guess, what was it, last Friday or something, and we kind of ran out of time. But we've had a really, really wild kind of week here in Australian politics with the ousting of a sitting prime minister, which, this has been something like I've never seen, and I don't think anyone's ever seen.
Well, has it calmed down any? Because it was distressing to watch that sort of bloodless palace coup in which one Labor member put the shiv in between Kevin Rudd's ribs.
Well, see, okay, hopefully my audio is getting a little bit better to you. It wasn't so much that another Labor member, Julia Gillard, didn't stick Rudd in the back. So I got to give you the timeline of this thing. Now, this is really weird. And this is one of those things that couldn't happen in the American system because of the fact that, you know, the leader of the party, the prime minister, is not elected directly by the people. He's elected as a representative. He or she is elected as a representative of their constituency. And whichever party takes power, their party leader is the prime minister. So the who is leader, there's a secondary battle that goes on. And that is led by the different factions within the party. And in the Labor Party, the biggest faction is the unions. And as the narrative was coming together, now this all kind of started late last Wednesday night, and we're coming up on a time where Prime Minister Rudd was expected soon to call the next election, and Rudd's personal opinion numbers have been a bit in the crapper for a while. For some things fairly, but in some ways really not fairly. And it all started to go sideways when Rudd went to Copenhagen. Bob, this goes all the way back to the climate talks. Because Rudd got in on a huge platform of that. I mean, he said that climate change was the moral issue of our time. He actually kind of took a bit of a religious fervor with it. And when he went over there, I think people expected that because he was going, he was going to somehow steer the whole ship around. And that kind of, and Copenhagen went nowhere. So a little bit of the wind was pulled out of his sails. So then we were going to have a cap and trade legislation, what they call an emissions trading scheme put through, which was one of the big things Rudd promised to do. Well, the denier misinformation campaign kicked in the whole thing. We had an obstructive opposition in the Senate. Now, the bill didn't go anywhere near as far as I thought it should have. But as always happens in these things, Bob, we weren't having the conversation we should have been having, where we were discussing reductions in carbon when that's not what the bill was about. The bill was about creating the infrastructure in which to cap and trade it before you put the limits in. So it got all distorted. It got held up. It fell apart.
You mean building the machine before you,
with people's approval of Prime Minister Rudd, even though he did all these other things like steer Australia through the global financial crisis better than any other country in the world. The apology to the Stolen Generations, and you know, there was a lot of good stuff going on. So as an election approaches, the factions start doing their polling, as they normally do. And, you know, to get ratings on how the prime minister's doing, how the party that the unions really helped get into power the last time to kill that whole work choices legislation, which you will remember, the draconian work laws. The unions were straight behind that, so they got straight behind Labor and got them in. And so this is just kind of a normal, what to me at the time was normal. But then whisper campaign started where they said, factions are leaning to removing Rudd. And, you know, we're all kind of like, yeah, bah, whatever. And the ABC's pushing this line that they've got a break on this. And I mean, they're ministers at, you know, events and functions that night going like, what are you talking about? But meanwhile, unbeknownst to even them, a couple of the unions, the Australian Workers Union and one other, and here's a term came up, Bob, that I've never heard before, which I had to actually have a good union mate of mine go track down his dad and explain this to me, but they were described, as this whole thing was playing out, they kept describing the Australian Workers Union as a right-wing union.
Oh, that's weird.
That term just kept stopping me dead in my tracks. What the hell is a right-wing union? Does that seem like just not even...
No, that doesn't compute.
Anything?
No, nothing. That's weird.
I'm not hearing you, Bob.
Oh, okay. Well, that creates a problem.
I've lost you.
Let me try. Can you hear that? Do you hear me now? No. Okay, this is trouble. No, John, you haven't.
Oh, okay, so I'm on. I'm not hearing you, though. This is really strange.
Well, yeah, because you were hearing the audio beforehand.
I had had you before. Anyway. Okay, this makes it kind of difficult. So hopefully this is kind of making sense here. But anyway, so I had it explained to me that the right-wing unions... Yeah. So it finally got explained to me. So here's a strange conversation, half chat, half me speaking over a telephone line, folks. So the right-wing unions basically were the guys that went along to get along underneath the draconian work choices laws that were under Howard. But honestly, when I've heard these people speak, they never sounded like they were that strangely right-wing. So here's the weird part that comes up. You have Kevin Rudd was considered very right on the labor side, right? And Julia Gillard comes from the left, union lawyer, you know, the whole routine. But yet Rudd was being backed by the most left factions of the party. Julia Gillard, the left ones, being backed by the most right factions of the party. Which none of this makes any sense. So, 10 o'clock that night, Prime Minister Rudd has a press conference. They break into television, the whole bit. And he says, Julia Gillard met in his office. He was calling the caucus together, and they were going to have a vote for the leadership the next day. It's like, you're joking. And by
at that point, it's shocking, even in terms of Australian politics, right?
Yeah. Oh, you're back. Oh, excellent.
There's only one way to find out if I fix it. I got to talk somewhere.
Yeah. No. Right on. So, like, you see what? First, we have a prime minister. Okay, I understand that people aren't exactly happy with some of the things that have gone down, but it has been unusual circumstances, and there. He has done the right things, but it came down to a style thing. He was very what they called bloody-minded about things. He had his vision and he was going for it, and the factions didn't like that. See, Rudd, when he basically got the leadership, he got it through popularity and basically flipped the old bird to the factions and said, I'm not playing the factional game. Well, once Rudd started to lose his grip, where it looked like very possibly, and to me, surprisingly, if you gave it the decision to the Australian people, that, and there's a whole mining tax, which I haven't even gotten into yet. There's been so much that's gone on, and there's been a lot of money spent. I think the miners actually tried to unseat a sitting prime minister because they didn't like a policy he was going to put in.
Trust me, John. If we're talking about coal... The solid fossil fuel industry out there is in full-on snit conniption mode. And what you saw, as strange as it may have appeared to you, what you saw was the same thing we're seeing over here. For instance, my congressman, Nick Joe Rahal.
Right.
Now,
yeah.
This guy's been in the Congress for 36 years. And he has been an absolutely unwavering ally and friend to the coal industry. It's one of those where never is heard a discouraging word kind of things. And they and they are full on after his ass. That you know, Don Blankenship is running his own private client opponent against him.
Right. Right.
And so what you saw there is not as surprising as what it may have looked like sort of closed loop. The question for you, if I may, this coming from David in Tennessee, is right-wing union another phrase for company union, like a union in name only, an employees club at a workplace that has zero power?
No, not actually. Now, you know, when the war feast thing was going on here, you know, and how you know, in the United States and the UK and here in Australia, unions were all kind of attacked at the same time, you know, during Reagan, Thatcher. And at that time, when the unions were attacked and decimated, they had to consolidate, as happened in the United States, as happened in the UK. And the Australian Workers Union, from what I've now found out via a friend of mine who was a Wharfie when the federal troops were sent in on the Wharfies here, basically said they were the ones that continued to try and work within what was a changing world. And so they're viewed as right-wing because they didn't stay hard-ass militant left, which here the Steelworkers Union is about, I think he was explaining to me, was about the only one that was left that was truly, truly, really hard left union. But you're also dealing in a country that has a different context when it comes to labor rights. I mean, you just look at the minimum wage, you know, standard and things like that. So, you know, you are dealing in a country that has a higher standard in general. So, you know, it's just a different metric. But where this whole thing gets even stranger, Bob, is to me is when Kevin Rudd first became the leader. I said, okay, this guy can take Howard out. And
well, he was smart. He was multilingual. Had policy ideas.
Yeah, and the whole thing about him being. They tried to make him out to be cold and calculated. And it wasn't that he was cold and calculated. I just think he was intellectual. I think he is, you know, maybe a little bit smug.
Maybe a little wonky. No. But John, hold up for a minute, if I may.
Yeah.
Because, you know me, I see, you know, I don't see single events. I see patterns. And that's what makes me feel not a little but a lot crazy sometimes. And I mentioned this the other night as we wound out the program because we were too short on time to be able to give this the time that it deserved. But I see a pattern here. And in those assertions that Kevin Rudd was sort of bloodless, too much an intellectual, you know, not prone to show his emotions, where have we heard that before?
Oh yeah. There are plenty of parallels in this thing, but what kind of doesn't make sense to me is, this actually I think makes Labor pretty well a shoo-in at the next election for a whole lot of reasons. First of all, where I was kind of going just a moment ago is when Rudd first came in, I saw Julia as his deputy and went, oh, yeah, baby, bring it on when that woman is prime minister. Because I, you know, it could have been either one of them at the time. But Julia, I think, smartly knew that Rudd was the more ready at the time.
What I find disturbing, though, John, is that you know you've got this parallel where Kevin Rudd was taken out for being too bloodless, too intellectual, too wonky, not emotional enough, and yet you've got the same things being presented against Barack Obama over here, and then while while Gordon Brown was no liberal bastion in the UK, he too was taken out by an element of the left siding with the right to oust a government. And the same pattern repeats itself in Australia, and I can't help what because this is looking it's too damned convenient. And I'm wondering if some of that same sort of thing is taking shape in this country.
Well, I have to wonder about so much of this. Because it just so, like I said, you know, that whole thing where the right factions were backed in the lefty and the left factions are back in the righty, and how none of it adds up. No matter, you know, because I'll tell you the day that this all went down, you know, Gail and I got up and we popped on the stream and we watched the whole thing develop from, you know, 6:30 in the morning through till. Julia was Prime Minister Gillard, I should really be respectful, was sworn in. I mean, it was just, and it was done by like noon or 1 in the afternoon, man. It was so fast. But then, now the opposition, they surely don't want this. Even though they're going, you know, new face, same, you know, failed policy, all that kind of normal, you know, the machine kind of spin stuff. But now, there is this real distinct difference. You know, the opposition leader is a real right-wing Christian fanatic, almost was a preacher. You know, kind of
God. Oh, dear God, not one of those Hillsongers.
Well, almost worse. But this guy, and this guy's got a mouth on him, and I'll tell you, this country is over 50% women. This is why I say Labor's a shoo-in. This country's over 50% women. If it comes down to a choice between Julia Gillard and Tony Abbott, I guarantee you, the entire female population is going to be like, I want no part of Tony Abbott because he wants me to have no choice. He wants me to have, you know, I mean, this is a guy that's actually, you know, he fought.
Are you guys still fighting that battle down there? I mean, I thought the civilized world had it as a sort of settled matter, and the whole abortion thingy was something that we just did for the entertainment.
No, it creeps up. It never gets to the level, but like. You know, when the day after pill was released, it was Tony Abbott that grandstanded to shut it down, you know, and got all, you know, crazy Christian and moral. Now, here's where it gets really interesting, Bob. Julia Gillard is an atheist.
Oh, get out the pitchforks and torches.
Not only is she an atheist, she's not married to her partner. I mean, we're talking. This is like serious progress on so many levels, and again, it makes it hurt because before she gets sworn in, Gail and I sat and watched Kevin Rudd give his final, you know, farewell as prime minister. And I'm telling you, man, I was like in tears, and he actually went down the list of the stuff that he had done, and you know, he actually came out and he said, you know, I was, you know, elected by the Australian people. Because he looked at it, and I think he was right in that particular election. It was a thing of a choice between him or Howard, and it was all about Rudd. Now, the opposition had a whole ad campaign that they'd already paid for to go on Kevin struggling, because Kevin's slogan was Kevin 07 during the 07 election, so they were doing a thing called Kevin O'Lemon.
Yeah,
so dear. So this is actually where, in the cruelness of politics, if you're looking at a party, you're saying, we have good policies. The only thing that's got us threatened right now is the fact that everyone seems to not like the style of the guy that we've got leading. Now, this is the logic that's being spoken out there. And Labor's gotten the bump, and Julia's going out there and has kind of kicked open the door on a couple of the issues that needed the door kicked open and some dialogue to happen, because the mining thing was a debacle of PR, man. If the government had actually come out and delivered the message right of what it was, the miners would have been shut down in a second.
How many are there, John? Just curious, do you know?
How many what?
How many miners are there in Australia?
What, actual mining workers?
Yeah.
Oh, I can find out for you.
See, I'm only wondering because of the inordinate sway that the industry has here. You know, even West Virginia. I mean, you know, the Mountain State. You know, coal is West Virginia, right? Well, coal only accounts for 7-point-some-odd% of the gross state product, and yet it owns the entire damn government.
Well, it's because there's so much actual, you know, such a chunk of the economy that they can claim to be theirs, and this is part of what the
right.
whole
but that chunk
was
what
about.
What I'm getting at, John, is that chunk is artificial insofar as isn't the single largest export leaving Australia, isn't it coal headed for China?
Yep.
And see, it's a big chunk of our exports as well. And that accounts for an artificially inflated value, I think, because if you take that out of the equation, I don't know what Australia's trade status is, but if you take coal out of our equation here, and I mean I'm not saying it would be a bad thing to do, it'd be a good, but the fact of the matter is, if you take it out of the equation here, then our trade deficit with China balloons.
Right. Right. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And it would be a similar situation here. And this is why, see, and this is on this like soup, this what they were calling the super profits tax here, right? Unfortunately, it was a stupid name. To call something a super profits tax, I think just is open to being twisted around in too many ways. But what it was is they were going to remove the old royalty system, wholesale royalty system, from all the from Australian resources, and they were going to change it to a much larger tax on the profits after all cost, which is actually in all cases when it comes to development of new projects and things a better deal. Because you don't start paying any tax on it until it's actually making money. But when it's making money, you're going to pay. And you're going to pay 40%, starting at about, I think it was 6% profit. And it was going to be really hard hit. But the whole point is, these are finite resources. You only pull them out of the ground once. The people need to be paid properly for them. While we have them. Right.
And by the way, Gail just shot me a note, John, telling me that 1% of the Australian workforce is mining. 1%.
Right. Thank you, babe. I hadn't found it in those terms yet. But that is some of the weird reality that's going on here. And the miners started this like massive ad campaign thing, where they basically lied to the Australian people. They said, you know, mining got us through the great financial crisis, which is bullshit. Mining kept ditching jobs through the crisis, while it was most of the other
right, because they perpetually continue to mechanize. I mean, remember, the American coal giant Peabody is hard at work down there.
Oh, and you know what they did, Bob? As soon as this thing was you know, announced that they were going to do this thing, all the companies said, I love this. And everyone flinched again, Bob. It's one of these moments. It's like going, when are you idiots going to learn? They went, well, you know, that those projects that we were going to start here, well, we're just not going to do them here anymore. And it's like, well, fine. Someone else will. But everyone went like, oh, no, to Fortescue Meadows. Oh, no, to all the rest of them, going, don't run away. When there were people in Australia that said, hey, you know what, if they don't want to mine it for that, I can get the money together in 2 days to create a company to mine it and keep the profits in Australia. Let them go. But they were able to fear everybody by doing these ad campaigns, showing the guy out on the mine and then going, who's it going to hurt? And a clever camera shot, and suddenly you're in a busy city going, everybody.
I got a sneaking suspicion that some of the same ad goobers are working on the same campaigns there that are working on them here, John.
It has to be because, you know, with what's going on in the Gulf and reality's coming crashing down really, really hard on people. And there's going to be a big push to stop doing things so carelessly and so thoughtlessly. Because, I mean, that's all the whole BP saga is. It's not giving a crap about anything but your money. And people are starting to give a crap about things other than their money. I mean, I just watching what's going on in the Gulf of Mexico, man. Lives, generations, ruined, lost, gone, see you, bye. So, you know, it's again those last, we're entering what could be one of those last throws fights. But if it's not now, it ain't ever going to happen, Bob. If what's going on right now, but I think you're right. Everything we're watching is, you know, reality is stacking up against those that refuse to see it.
It is, John. Hey. But the other side of the coin is that we are seeing, because now that they're talking about global belt tightening,
what we're seeing is a
concerted assault on the social welfare state on a global basis.
What country has bucked that trend?
You guys?
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, right? Because when this all happened, former Prime Minister Rudd was on his way to Canada for the G20. So last minute, you know, there's a swearing in, and the very next day, you know, our new Deputy Prime Minister, Wayne Swan, goes, you know, trotting off to Canada. And when he comes back, you know, he talked about, you know, the global belt tightening, blah, 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 blah. But he said, however, you know, I do take pleasure in saying that because of the measures of spending money and keeping people in work, that his government, because he was the treasurer under the previous government, had done, where all the rest of the nations of the world are shooting to have their deficits by 2013, Australia is very likely going to be back in a surplus.
You know, it's good. It's a good thing Australia is surrounded by water, John. It really, really is. And it's a good thing I'm as pale and prone to sunburn as I am. And by the way, you might find this interesting as well as the other Australian listeners. You guys know what a hateful and junk science laden economic cesspit the Heritage Foundation is, right?
Oh yeah.
Well, Jason writes in and says, Australia is deemed the third most economically free nation on Earth. He said, interesting that with a $15 an hour minimum wage, the Heritage Foundation ranked Australia the third most economically free country. The U.S. came in eighth. I hope Australia does buck the trend, because there's creepy stuff going on out there. David in Tennessee reminding me that even the Dutch voted in a government that's center-right for the first time in 30-plus years, anti-social welfare, very anti-immigration, and vociferously, violently anti-Islam.
Here's an interesting one. Here's one where I think, so far, at least in just rhetoric, Julia Gillard's taken, I think, is probably doing something very smart. She's Gail used the term emotional intelligence with her, and she, because one of the big issues has been the scaremongering over the boats coming here, she made some statements saying, I want to change the whole debate about immigration. And I want to change the whole debate about the big Australia plan. And she actually is creating a whole or reorganizing departments to change them into a sustainable Australia, which not only incorporates what your immigration targets will be, because she said you just can't have blanket immigration targets, because you don't want to create communities with no services, and you don't want to be sending people to places that don't need them, and you don't want to be avoiding the places that need them, like in the Northern Territory. You know, she talks about all these different things, but how infrastructure, social planning, all the stuff has to go around not just shooting for a bigger Australia, but like a well-planned, sustainable one, and that encompasses...
Right, because of course we all understand that... unmanaged, uncontrolled, out-of-control growth equals cancer on a societal or a corporal the basis. Hey, John, I'm running out of it, but, man, I'm glad you got to ring in. And, hey, we got more work to do, getting the system back.
Yeah.
Oh, joy.
Yeah. People can log in with a whole bunch of different stuff.
Oh, yeah. Do that, please.
On the webpage, too. Yeah. Everybody, you can log in with Facebook. What do we have? Facebook, Google, Yahoo, OpenID, and Twitter coming soon. And if one of those accounts that you sign in with has an old one of our accounts with the same email address, you should be able to connect them. So hopefully you'll be able to get your old registrations back that we had previously. Otherwise, go nuts.
Bingo. And, I think, among other things, having people participate, and we got to remember, we're going to have we'll have noobs in the room, perhaps, when we do the history lectures out of Concord University. And that ought to be a nice warm-up, as well as commenting. A nice warm-up for what goes down next month out in Vegas.
Yeah, that's what
might be a whole lot of new friends out there.
Yeah, and the idea was to make it as easy for people to come in, leave a comment, and participate.
Exactly. Thank you, John. Thank you for everything.
All right, brother.
All right.
All right, man. Take care.
Take care. Have a great day. Bye now. Oh, I miss those days of conversations with John Fox. That was a lot of fun. And I promise we will get this stuff taken care of. We really, really will. We've got a few minutes left and a couple of blinking lights remaining on the phone. Hey, welcome to the program.
Rob.
Hey, what's up, Cossack?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm pretty good. Sorry about the hold time, but you're still there, and I'm happy to hear it.
I'll wait.
Wait no longer. What's on your mind?
First of all, you heard about the Listening to America tour.
No. Am I going to regret this?
The Pete Peterson put together?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to regret this.
Oh, yes, you're going to regret.
By listening to America, he means telling America to bend over and grab its ankles?
Exactly. And unfortunately for him... the people were not as swayed as he thought they were. they kind of fought back.
Oh, good. People were cranky?
Oh, were they cranky?
Maybe cranky is the first step on what Reverbo was talking about, you know, make it personal and you know, get a little pissed about this.
Exactly. I mean, they were plying the populace with, we can't cut this and we can't cut that. We can't cut the military. We can't cut. And people were saying, no, we need to start taxing the rich. We need to start cutting the military budget. We need to. All the things that they didn't want to hear is what they heard.
Well, that explains why a freak like your senatorial candidate in Florida, Marco Rubio, is out there hooting and hollering that it's time to make the Bush tax cuts for the rich people permanent and do it now.
Yeah, it ain't going to happen. It ain't going to happen. Not even accidentally. People were saying things like, oh, I don't know, the Defense Department needs to be cut by 10%. No, it needs to be cut by 15%. No, it needs to be cut by 25%. These are things they didn't want to hear. And this was coming up over and over and over again, no matter how much they primed them to say otherwise.
You know, I've got an idea. Let's keep all the defense contractors happy and keep making stuff to blow things up. But let's stop the stupid wars. That would amount to a 25 or 30% cut in the defense budget, wouldn't it?
That's one of the things they were talking about, even though they were told they couldn't do that. They said, screw you, we're going to do it anyway. Which I thought was kind of cute.
Oh, that's rich. That's exquisite. Well, Cossack, yeah. I'm glad you did take the time to wait, and I'm sorry the time was short, but we'll have at it again, okay?
Have at it.
All right. Thanks, Cossack. Later. Bye now. Oh, the idea of Pete Peterson getting a bit of a comeuppance is a pleasant thing. And that's it for the program this evening. Tomorrow night, of course, prayer meeting Wednesday. Do be here. Be here, please. And thank you for being here this evening. And this is an evening that has absolutely flown by. Thank you for tolerating my little fit of pique and temper in the first hour of the program. I try to keep strapped down, but sometimes I get loose, despite my best efforts not to. Thanks to everybody who makes this program everything that it is. First of all and foremost, you, who by your contributions of your time, your energy, your ideas, and yes, your financial support, make this all possible. Thank you. We are moving into July. We're doing it with a monkey off our back, but we're moving into July. Thank you to Lottie in the chat room, to our news ninjas Gene and Susan, to our blogger Texas Betsy. John Fox, whom you just heard from, is many things to all of us, many hats on that man, webmaster, web designer, musician extraordinaire, and host of All Foxed Up, as soon as we find a nice comfortable time slot for it to come back in. Thanks, John. Thanks to our IT professional, Peter Godbold. To Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. WhiteRoseSociety.org is the single greatest reason there is still liberal radio in this country to the extent that there is. Beginning with the White Rose Society in 2002, Ben Birch literally, single-handedly saved it. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. You know why they are. You know why I say that they are. Because they are. Thanks to our op-ed correspondent at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, Cavalcade of Crazy, Reverbo. You heard from him this evening. Keep an eye on the website for the latest coming from his mind into the electrons of the series of tubes and landing at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Thanks to our Southeast correspondent, Matt Osborne, Osborne, Inc., OSBORNEINK.com. And thanks to my head writer, David, in Tennessee. And always,
always, always. Gina, it's all for you.